Do you understand the inherent complexity supporting all life? Do you appreciate the miracle of the creation of all creatures, animals, plants, underwater life and microscopic life? Can you realize the meaning, explanation and purpose behind the fact that any life exists in the universe at all, including your own? This is Acts of 20, Love and Fate. Hello dear listeners. Good morning and good evening. You are listening to Acts of 20, Love and Fate, a podcast of spirit and science. In this episode, we will be talking about what science is, what science can do and what it cannot do. Then we will touch upon the probability of life and existence itself. Be mindful. Victory lies just ahead. On Earth, there are about 7.9 billion people as of February 2022. Of those 7.9 billion people, 6.7 billion of them identify as religious or belonging to a religion, or 85% of the world population. Of those 6.7 billion people, the largest category is Christianity at 2.38 billion, or about one-third. The Bible is a collection of religious texts considered sacred to Christians. Do you know how many copies were sold over all of recorded history? Data from 2020 indicates that the Bible is still the best-selling book of all time by an enormous margin, having sold more than 5 billion copies to date. Allow me to briefly explain how large 1 billion is, in case you don't grasp its enormity. For comparison, we will use the number 1 million. In terms of our Gregorian calendar, 1 million seconds is equivalent to about 11.5 days, or less than 2 weeks. Compare that to 1 billion seconds, which would be equivalent to almost 32 years. Faith is an absolutely essential quality any Christian must have, as we know and understand that God's existence cannot be shown empirically. Perhaps you already have faith in God or you are on the fence regarding theology. There are very good reasons for believing in God that this series will cover, but at the same time there is a certain amount of faith you must have to be a successful Christian. This is to bridge the gap between God and man, by surrendering absolute control over all the crucial aspects of your life and letting go of what your eyes tell you, and to instead listen to what God tells you. Is there life on Earth because of simple random chance through evolution? Also called the chance hypothesis, or is there life on Earth because of chemically destined molecules to combine with each other to create life? Also called chemical necessity. Or maybe there's life on Earth as a combination of the two. Or because of special creation by a great designer. Has all life on Earth evolved over millions of years, as evolutionists claim? Or did a transcendent God author it? As I mentioned previously, God's existence cannot be shown empirically, but it is very possible to see His presence and design in all of reality. Not only can we create and test scientific hypotheses regarding an intelligent designer, but the Bible described this very concept thousands of years ago in Romans chapter 1 verse 19 and 20, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." Consider the small but amazingly unique blue marble called Earth upon which we live, with its astonishingly complex biological systems, biomes, geography, plants, animals, microscopic life and of course the sentient human mind. Consider the cosmos, the planets and stars, our galaxy and the observable universe that we are vastly unable to ever understand. Consider the necessary to explain ultimate creation of matter, energy and the laws of physics, their constants, and reality as we know it. I have studied various hypotheses on biological systems, neo-Darwinism, cosmology and design in an effort to evaluate where current scientific research is regarding origin of life research. As a biomolecular research scientist in the field, I have discovered that there have not been any specific, mechanistic or non-question-begging explanations that adequately describe how life, matter and energy began. There have been no proposed models by any scientist that fit this standard at present. What this means is that science has still not been able to adequately explain why or how we are here. There is at least another explanation that is more causally adequate in regards to these ultimate questions that this series will explain. I am not stating these facts as positive evidence for the existence of a great creator. As you will see in this podcast series, I will explain and make the case for the inadequacy of science's explanations for the creation of everything. I will also show positive evidence for the necessary presence of a higher, transcendent mind is the best causal explanation for the origin of the universe, its physical laws, and the information-rich biological systems that all life on Earth shares. It would be wise to first define some terms to ensure that we understand the same meanings. When I say question begging, I am referencing a logical fallacy which occurs when an explanation for a given circumstance lacks any real explanatory power, and leaves an obvious but unexplained question. For example, imagine a man stuck inside a 12-foot hole that he dug in his backyard. The hole is too deep for him to escape, so he tries to think of a way out. Then he suddenly remembers that he has a 20-foot ladder in his garage that he can use to get himself out of the hole. So the man goes to the garage, gets the ladder, goes back to the hole and then uses the ladder to successfully escape his predicament. A weak explanation here would be that the man got out of the hole by using the ladder. Obviously, this explanation leaves a very large question that remains unanswered. How did the man get out of the hole in the first place? The answer to this question is absolutely critical to adequately describe how the solution to the man's problem was reached, described in a step-by-step, mechanistic explanation, without begging the question. Would you accept the sentence, "The man got out of the hole using a ladder that wasn't there initially," as an adequate explanation for how he actually got out? Obviously not. Let's also define Darwinism and Neo-Darwinism. Darwinism is the theory authored by Charles Darwin where he proposes that evolution of species takes place through an adaptive process over time, called natural selection. Natural selection will select genes that have the highest survival rate in a given population. In other words, Darwinism is the struggle to exist, natural selection, plus heredity, passing of genes to the next generation. Neo-Darwinism is a new and modified version of Darwinism. Neo-Darwinism also involves natural selection and heredity like Darwinism, but additionally incorporates recent discoveries in modern biology like variation, random mutation and gene isolation. I will be mainly referencing Neo-Darwinism throughout this podcast series. According to Oxford Languages, science can be broadly defined as the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. In other words, it is a path to knowledge for understanding and interpreting our reality. What science cannot do. Let's now have an important discussion regarding what science can prove and what it cannot prove, as well as science's limitations. I'm sure you've heard some of our greatest scientific theories. The theory of evolution, the Big Bang theory, and the theory of gravity. You've probably also heard of the concept of a quote-unquote proof, and the claims that certain pieces of evidence quote-unquote prove the validities of these theories. Fossils, genetic inheritance, and DNA mutations prove the theory of evolution. The expansion of the universe, the formation of stars, galaxies, heavy elements, and the existence of the cosmic microwave background radiation prove the Big Bang theory. And falling objects, orbiting satellites, planetary motion, and ocean tides prove the theory of gravity. Except, everything I just said is not true at all. Not in the technical sense nor in the logical sense. While the evidence provided very strong evidence for those theories, they aren't proof. To put it simply, when it comes to science, proving anything is simply not possible. A very common misconception about science is that these so-called scientific proofs exist, when in reality no such thing exists. Legitimate proofs exist only in mathematics and logic, not in science. Mathematics and logic are both closed, self-contained systems of propositions, whereas science is empirical and deals with nature as it exists. The primary criterion and standard of evaluation of scientific theory is evidence, not proof. All else being equal, scientists prefer theories for which there is more and better evidence, rather than theories for which there is less and worse evidence. In other words, to 100% prove anything at all is not in the language of science. All scientific knowledge is tentative and provisional, and nothing is final. There is no such thing as final proven knowledge in science. The currently accepted theory of a phenomenon is simply the best explanation for it among all available alternatives. Its status as the accepted theory depends on the available information at the time and reserves the possibility that another, better theory may come along tomorrow. No knowledge or theory, which embodies scientific knowledge, is final. Describing reality is immeasurably difficult. From an empirical point of view, we can quantify, measure, and observe. Even armed with this knowledge though, those quantities are only as good as the tools and equipment we use to make those observations and measurements. We also can't observe or measure everything. For instance, it wouldn't be possible to measure every state of every particle in the universe under every condition all the time. We aren't God. A subatomic particle like the electron is unobservable and its location can only be estimated by probability. At some point, we have to extrapolate and assume all things work as we think they do. While this is incredibly powerful and useful, it's also incredibly limiting. In short, a scientific theory is a framework for explaining what we already know happens as well as predicting what will happen under different or new, untested circumstances. Our best theories, like the theory of evolution, the Big Bang theory, and Einstein's general relativity, fall into this definition. We are able to make predictions and estimates of what will happen under a variety of different conditions, followed up by going out to test those predictions in the field. So far, these theories have been shown to be demonstrably valid. For those theories, among many others, measurements and observations that have been performed to test these theories have been consistently successful. But as validating as that is, and as powerful as it is to falsify alternatives, it's completely impossible to prove anything in science. The odds of chance. Let's start with an article from the Wall Street Journal published in 2014. Though the author of this article is not a scientist and the editor has been unfairly criticized by materialists for publishing this article, you will see that the same conclusions have been drawn and corroborated independently by other established philosophers of science in the past and present, and will be discussed in more detail. This article deftly demonstrates why it is impossible for God not to exist. It's long, but compelling. It begins. In 1966, the astronomer Carl Sagan announced that there were two important criteria for a planet to support life: the right kind of star, and the right distance from that star. Given the roughly octillion, one followed by 27 zeros, planets in the universe, there should have been about septillion, one followed by 24 zeros, planets capable of supporting life. With such spectacular odds, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, a large, expensive collection of private and publicly funded projects launched in the 1960s, was sure to turn up something soon. Scientists listened with a vast radio telescopic network for signals that resembled coded intelligence and were not merely random. But as years passed, the silence from the rest of the universe was deafening. As of 2014, researchers have discovered precisely nothing. Take a moment to understand the implications of this statement. The article continues. As our knowledge of the universe increased, it became clear that there were far more factors necessary for life than Sagan supposed. His two parameters grew to 10 and then 20 and then 50, and so the number of potentially life-supporting planets decreased accordingly. The number dropped, and kept on plummeting. As factors continued to be discovered, the number of possible planets hit zero and kept going. In other words, the odds turned against any planet in the universe supporting life, including this one. Probability said that even we, Earth, shouldn't be here. Today there are more than 200 known parameters necessary for a planet to support life, every single one of which must be perfectly met, or the whole thing falls apart. Without a massive planet like Jupiter nearby, for instance, whose gravity will draw away asteroids, 1,000 times as many would hit Earth's surface. The odds against life in the universe are simply astonishing. Can every one of those many parameters have been perfect by accident? At what point is it fair to admit that science suggests we cannot be the result of random forces? Doesn't assuming that an intelligence created these perfect conditions require far less faith than believing a life-sustaining Earth just happened to beat the inconceivable odds to come into being? The article continues showing more evidence of a God, including an expert whose atheism is greatly shaken. It says, by recent developments, the fine-tuning necessary for life to exist on a planet is nothing compared with the fine-tuning required for the universe to exist at all. For example, astrophysicists now know that the values of the four fundamental forces, gravity, the electromagnetic force, and the strong and weak nuclear forces, were determined less than 1/1,000,000th of a second after the Big Bang. Alter any one value and the universe could not exist. For instance, if the ratio between the nuclear strong force and the electromagnetic force had been off by the tiniest fraction of the tiniest fraction, by even one part in 100 followed by 15 zeros, then no stars could have ever formed at all. Multiply that single parameter by all the other necessary conditions, and the odds against the universe existing are so heart-stoppingly astronomical that the notion that it all just happened defies common sense. It would be like tossing a coin and having it come up heads 10 quintillion times in a row. Fred Hoyle, the astronomer who coined the term Big Bang, said his atheism was greatly shaken at these developments. He later wrote that a common-sense interpretation of the facts suggests a super-intellect has monkeyed with the physics, as well as with chemistry and biology. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question. Theoretical physicist Paul Davis has said that the appearance of design is overwhelming, and Oxford professor Drive John Lennox has said the more we get to know about our universe, the more the hypothesis that there is a creator gains in credibility as the best explanation of why we are here. This was a very long quote, but it was very important to hear. What is the truth of modern science regarding the origin of all matter in the universe? Do scientists claim it has always existed? Or have they determined there was a moment in time when all matter came into existence? In the early to mid-20th century, it was largely believed among the scientific community that the universe was eternal in terms of time and space. But it was scientifically determined in 1964 that yes, the universe did indeed have a beginning, a time when all of reality was condensed into a single, volumeless, matterless, spaceless singularity that has been expanding ever since. And so the age of the universe has been estimated to be 13.8 billion years. This was proven via discovery of the cosmic microwave background radiation, the CMBR, which will be discussed in detail later. What's the problem for scientists if the universe had a beginning? If the universe had a beginning, materialists must now explain how the universe came into being from nothing. You cannot have something slowly come into existence from nothing. Matter could not have come into existence by itself. No rational person could possibly believe the entire universe gradually came into existence by itself. Try to build something, anything, from nothing. Even with your creative power engaged in the effort, you would never be able. You cannot in 100 lifetimes of trying produce a single thing from nothing. Can any doubter believe everything in the entirety of the universe, in all its exquisite detail, came into existence completely by itself? Be honest. This strongly indicates that the natural physical realm demands the existence of a great creator. Some listening to this podcast may be asking, who created the creator? If God created all of existence, who created God? From a logical standpoint, this question makes perfect sense to ask and it displays your critical thinking skills. I would start my explanation with these questions: why does God need to have been created? Why can't there be an ultimate force that has no beginning or end? Richard Dawkins, a noted scientist and prominent public atheist, stated in his book The Blind Watchmaker this postulation, that a being can only create something as complex as itself. This is a logical fallacy, however. But that aside, let's assume it as a truism for a moment. That would mean that the only thing capable of creating a god would be another god, or that God created itself, a logical paradox. Yet if we believe in matter, space and energy being eternal, having always existed, then why not another perpetual force in the form of a designing mind? It is logically inconsistent to conclude that anything that exists must have a higher cause, a creator, on the sole premise that it exists. Let's listen to this source about the universal redshift and its relationship with astronomy. It isn't simply that galaxies are moving away from us that causes a redshift, but rather that the space between ourselves and the galaxy redshifts the light on its journey from that distant point to our eyes. Of course, this is predicated on an assumption whose validity we have no way of testing. If it's wrong, so may be all the conclusions we draw from this. It's a leap of faith to assume that it will, and while these are often good leaps of faith, you cannot prove that these leaps are always valid. If the laws of nature change over time, or behave differently under different conditions, or in different directions or locations, or aren't applicable to the system you're dealing with, your predictions will be wrong. And that's why everything we do in science, no matter how well it gets tested, is always preliminary. If someone tells you a scientific theory has been proven, you should ask what they mean by that. Normally, they mean, they've convinced themselves that this thing is true, or they have overwhelming evidence that a specific idea is valid over a specific range. As stated before, nothing in science can ever truly be proven and is always subject to revision. As Einstein himself once said, the scientific theorist is not to be envied. For nature, or more precisely experiment, is not a very friendly judge of his work. It never says yes to a theory. In the most favorable cases it says maybe, and in the great majority of cases simply no. If an experiment agrees with a theory, it means for the latter maybe, and if it does not agree it means no. Probably every theory will someday experience its no, most theories, soon after conception. Let's turn this concept around to take a look at our everyday life. There are things that we unconditionally believe in on a daily basis, yet we have no proof of it at all ever occurring. What are some specific elements that cannot be scientifically demonstrated but that we are all rational to accept? Quoting from Dr. William Lane Craig, a professor of philosophy at the Houston Baptist University, here are five logical and mathematical truths that cannot be demonstrated empirically by science, but that we still accept as true. 1. Science being the best way to understand the world. Science presupposes logic and math, so trying to prove science by science would be arguing in a circle. 2. Metaphysical truths, for example, there are other minds other than my own, or that the external world is real, or that the past was not created 5 minutes ago with an appearance of age, are rational beliefs that cannot be scientifically proven. 3. Ethical beliefs about statements of value are not accessible by the scientific method. You can't show by science whether the Nazi scientists in concentration camps did anything evil as opposed to the scientists in Western democracies. 4. Aesthetic judgments cannot be accessed by the scientific method because things like beauty, or good, cannot be scientifically proven. 5. Finally, and most remarkably, would be science itself. Science cannot be justified by the scientific method. Science is permeated with unprovable assumptions. For example, in the special theory of relativity, the whole theory hinges on the assumption that the speed of light is constant in a one-way direction between any two points, but that assumption strictly cannot be proven. We simply have to assume that it's true in order to hold to the theory. None of these beliefs can be scientifically demonstrated, and yet they are accepted as rational by all of us. So don't try to prove things, instead try to convince yourself. And be your own harshest critic and your own greatest skeptic. Certain scientific theories will someday fail, and when it does, it will herald a new era of inquiry and discovery. To give a preview for the next episode, I want you to imagine the common household mousetrap. There are 5 parts to the basic mousetrap: the platform, the catch, the spring, the hammer, and the holding bar. Now imagine taking away any one of those 5 parts. Now ask yourself, can the mousetrap still execute its primary function? That is, can the mousetrap still trap mice? The answer, no. Since the mousetrap cannot be made any simpler by removing any part of it, it represents a concept called irreducible complexity. This idea applies to biological life and, in particular, biomolecular life and biological systems. It is the same for these structures and systems at the molecular level that no single part can be removed and still perform its intended function. In other words, these systems cannot be reduced further in complexity, and thus they cannot be produced gradually, by slight, successive modifications from a less complex configuration. They must exist exactly as they are, whole and complete, or they cannot exist at all. If they cease functioning, then the organism ceases living. What are the implications of this? In the next episode, I will guide you into the realm of microorganisms and biomolecules. I will apply the concept of irreducible complexity to the bacterial flagellar motor, as well as the tiny molecular syringe called a type 3 secretion system, or the T3SS. You will see how it is impossible for these molecular machines to develop in a gradual step-by-step process, as postulated by neo-Darwinism and speculated by materialists. There is much more fascinating information coming. This is Paul Joshua, ever may your future be bright, and thank you for listening to this episode of Acts of 20, Love, and Fate.